Yo, this hot, this the spot, there it is, pod.com. We're interviewing the best comedians, so tune in quick and get your ears receiving them. We talking about life and life to stream right to you, from the microphone right to your home, dude. Side note, this might get embarrassing, but no, don't sweat, yo, cause there it is.
Welcome to the There It Is podcast, a comedy podcast to help you find your inspiration. I'm your host, Jason Farr. Let's do this. This episode is the reason we do this podcast. It's such a perfect example of to help you find your inspiration. We talked to Anatasha Blakely. She's an improviser. She's a filmmaker. She's a writer. She's an actor. She is awesome. She and I just dove right into, we got into the good stuff immediately. I mean, it was like as soon as the call started, we really started talking about the stuff. It's a really fun episode. I thoroughly enjoyed it. We talk at the end about her movie, Inch Thick, Knee Deep. So stick around for that. But let's just get right to it. Here's my chat with Anatasha Blakely.
So we got connected through Brian James O'Connell.
Mm-hmm. I love that man.
He's wonderful and he's fantastic. He's super talented, but also like he's a true artist. And as he has said a number of times to people who he's had the pleasure of teaching, he will say like, I'm always there. You know, if you need to ask any questions, I'm always your teacher is the way he looks at it. And I love that. He's such an artist. He's a big giver. So I appreciate him immensely.
Yeah, I feel very much that he's a great friend and has remained a wonderful mentor to me. Mm. Exactly as you said, he's so generous with his time and his talents. And there have been just many occasions where I've had huge artistic expression breakthroughs, and he's been a big part of that. Like when I first decided I wanted to try my hand at filmmaking, he let me come over to his house and just pick his brain and gave excellent advice, and then was so generous of spirit when I took some of that advice and didn't take other parts of that advice, and was very like, yeah, do your thing. And so he's just wonderful.
Yeah. He's great at giving direct advice and in not a mean way, you know, mm-hmm. like he's direct, but it's not mean. But like so many people are not used to directness. Mm-hmm. And if he notices that, then he's going to put an arm around you and make you feel better. You know, like he's because he's not trying to hurt anybody. I took a workshop with him where somebody got noted and they started like being apologetic. And he was like, no. You know, he literally put an arm around her. It's like, No, I will not allow you to let this beautiful art form be something you use to criticize yourself.
Oh, like that is not beautiful.
What this is about. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like we're working to build new skills, and he's really good at articulating something and being like, hey, here's a skill that you could craft, mm-hmm. but it's not, has nothing to do with your self-worth. Like you got to love yourself right. outside of your art form. I actually think it helps you grow faster. I took a martial arts class last year that I was absolutely in love with. It was Jeet Kune Do. And I noticed when new people would come in that it was just like improv, where if they had a mental block where they were like, oh, I suck, like I can't get it right, that it would actually make it harder for them to learn the punch. Like you could actually see that they were blocking themselves by attaching some personal meaning to it. And then the people who came in and could take a note and be like, that's not about me, I'm just going to make mm-hmm. the adjustment, and I don't have an opinion or a judgment about it, would learn a lot faster. And it was right. so much easier for me to see being a beginner again in an art form than I could see it in improv. And then I was like, oh, that's what I need to do in my other art forms, is just be like, it's not personal, there's no judgment, just like make an adjustment and try it.
Exactly. Yeah. I took this is not as cool as Jeet Kune Do, but I took a voice lesson class.
That's cool. No, that's cool. That's cool too.
Sure, but not in the way Jeet Kune Do is.
Yeah, I was obsessed with Bruce Lee during the pandemic, so it just lots of stuff happened. I went through
a
phase.
Obsession to have.
I'm kind of still in that phase, but okay, tell me about your voice lesson.
Well, yeah, I remember I did that same sort of thing of apologizing, like that woman in the workshop I was in did, where, you know, the teacher wasn't trying to be hard on me. She was just saying, "Oh no, here's the note." And I was like, "Oh, sorry." And she stopped and was like, "No." Like, if you were perfect at this, you wouldn't be taking a lesson.
Yeah.
Like, of course you're going to do something, quote unquote, incorrect. You don't need to apologize for that. That's just how this is.
Yeah, it's so real. When I was a kid, I was absolutely terrified of singing. I mean, I still am, but when I was a kid, it was paralyzing. I really wanted to do theater. And, you know, school would do a musical and I'd get in there and be like, "I'm so sorry." Like, it would go into total freeze mode. And yeah. I just felt like it was something I couldn't do. And recently I did a play where they were like, "Hey, there's going to be a ton of singing in this." And I knew that weeks before I went out, and I was like, "All right, I'm going to do a singing lesson every week," in the hopes that when I get into rehearsal, I'm not the least competent person in the room and I can bring something to the table. That process was so cool because I realized how much you have to be willing to like make ugly sounds in order to learn how to make beautiful sounds. And it's just the same thing of like the willingness to fail, to try and like totally bomb on stage in order to push the boundary enough to actually do something cool.
Yeah, that is really what it is, you know, with improv, with any art form. Like, you can't get better if you're playing it safe, you're doing the thing that you can do super easily, that's like a basic part of the activity, then you're not challenging yourself. And if you're not challenging yourself, how are you getting better? But then also, the good stuff is the hard stuff a lot of times. Not all the time, because sometimes it's like, you know, a great guitar solo can just be a really restrained, simple guitar solo. But at the same time, if all you're doing is the thing that's simple for you, then sometimes it's not going to pop. And when it does pop is when the audience can kind of feel the person reaching for that tough thing or reaching for greatness. And that is enough, you know, just reaching for it. There's a whole lot of, like, I think, balance we have to have when pursuing performance art. Because you have to like get the perfectionism out of there, but then you also have to strive. But then sometimes you do have to make the choice that's like, fine, this choice is fine. And it's a weird balancing act of like, how do you strive to be great, strive to get better, but then also be kind to yourself, and then all by ignoring things like what's perfect, like trying to be perfect.
It's so interesting that there's just a season for all things. Right. I feel like I'm definitely in a season right now where I'm wanting to give myself tall orders, where I'm like, that's a little hard and might bomb. Can I risk a little bit more, be a little grittier and go for it? And that's the season I'm in. And sometimes I'm in a season where I just want to sit under a tree. I'm actually trying to marry those and like feel very restful when I'm restful right now and very gritty when I'm working. Mm-hmm. I don't know how I'm doing, but I think giving yourself those just manageable challenges is sort of the best thing in life, because learning is so fun. It's like that growth is so satisfying.
It is. Sometimes.
What are you working on right now? Like, what's your just manageable challenge that you're like, "Oh, it's kind of hard, but it's exciting"?
Well, I'm getting married next month.
Congratulations.
Next month. Thank you. And so a lot of my brain is on that. But there are some like creative things. Like, we have a dance lesson tonight that we're taking. And so that's probably one way I'm going to be stretching myself. And improv is just kind of always there, because I perform twice a week now, which is awesome. And I'm so lucky. But at the same time, when you're like in wedding planning brain, your bandwidth gets spread real thin. And I just had a cold last week after my bachelor weekend. So energy wise, I'm not there mentally. And I had practice last night, and I was like, oof, I cannot bring my full self to this, but I can't miss practice again because I missed it last week from being out of town. And so, you know, I'm trying to, I want to grow not only as an improviser, but also as a teacher, because I'm about to start teaching. And I look at it as like teaching / coaching. And so I'm also trying to like absorb a bunch of lessons there so that I can be strong in that way. But life just keeps on lifing, and that, you know, it is great when you, if you can rest, when you can be, you can really fully enjoy rest in the time that you're resting and grow and fully enjoy that at the time when you're growing. But life will teach you lessons when you're like, I need to rest right now, don't I? Oh, okay. No, I have to spread myself for this as well. You know, it's tough. You know, life has its own plans and you have to forego your own plans a lot of times. And so I'm trying to get better at a number of things while also realizing how tired I am and not ready for growth in some areas. I feel like I want to grow in, but just don't
well,
feel like
I feel like
to grow in.
Knowing that you have a wedding coming up is like the best thing that you could do is be present to all of that, because mm-hmm. it'll go by so fast. And then, and you'll be like, whoa, do I even remember my wedding? And that's yeah. such a liminal event where you're crossing this social threshold. When I got married, I was like, you know, we're in love. We don't need to get married. Like I was never in this relationship thinking like, this is my goal. Mm-hmm. But on the other side of having a social ritual, having a liminal event, everybody yeah. does treat you different and your life does change, because I think humans are really attracted to have, like, you know, to crossing thresholds and having symbolism in their life. And so, you know, being present to that, I was like, that seems like enough growth to me. That's such a huge thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I really appreciate that advice, because I do want to be present and enjoy this and kind of get out of my head and be kind to myself with the self-talk. Because some yeah. negative self-talk is seeping in.
Yeah. I did a thing recently where I talked to my inner critic. It was something that I heard on a Pete Holmes podcast. It's like Annie Lamott's boyfriend, partner, I can't remember his name, but he talked about speaking to your inner critic, mm-hmm. and it basically asked it to semi-retire on a beach. And shockingly, having a weird conversation with yourself or some part of yourself was really helpful, because now that voice yeah. is so distinct to me. Like yeah. I can tell when it's that voice and not yeah. my, let's say, greater inner wisdom, and I'll be like, mm-hmm. Oh, hey, let's not right now, not for, you know what I mean? You're okay. Go back yeah. to the beach.
Yeah.
Weirdly, that's been really helpful.
That's awesome. In the fall, I was doing The Artist Way. I don't know
nice.
If you've done The Artist
Way. Oh yeah. I love Julia Cameron. I like yeah. her. She has another book, Walking in This World.
Yeah.
But also I'm like, yeah, everybody do the follow-up. Cause I feel like the follow-up.
Okay, yeah. I have
deeper.
The two
it's
follow-ups.
So
yeah.
Yeah.
And so we're doing that, and I was doing Morning Pages and in therapy. So there was this like triple Oof. Whammy of like self-care that I was getting, and really got in tune with those inner voices. And I need to do the Morning Pages again, because it keeps that voice, that the positive core self voice alive for me, or like there, and I can hear it. And it is like, I know this sounds super woo to people who haven't done these sort of things, but like when you do get sort of into, when you do speak to your inner voices and your inner selves or part of yourself, you do start recognizing the differences. And it's so great. Because mm-hmm. it is like you said, of just like being able to be like, hey, no, you know, not right now. And yeah. it's so
thank
helpful.
Thanks for helping me survive. I know that you've been there when things are tough and you're just trying to protect me, but I don't need you right now.
Right.
So you're heard. Thanks.
Yeah.
Now, shh.
I kicked the really mean one out last year. I was like, you're getting the fuck out of here.
What did that look like? Like, are you, you know what I mean? Is that, was that a long process? Did you have an epiphany moment where it just happened?
I think it was a process where I was sort of like, hey, wait, this voice is just nasty. You're not trying to help. And I don't like anything you've ever said to me. It's never been trying to help. It's only been there to like degrade me. Get the fuck out of here. Like,
get
I'm done with you.
Here.
Like, we're done. Like, I broke up. I didn't look back. And if that voice ever tries to peep its way in, the couple of times it has, the like positive voice in me was like, no. Like, that voice, my inner voices were like, having the conversation, so like I didn't have to. No, man, you're done. You're done, man. Like I changed the locks for a reason.
Yeah, exactly. I saw like a meme that was like, me to myself, is she bothering you? And like that like really stuck with me. Like I'm always like, is she bothering you? I'm like, yeah, she is bothering me. Get the fuck out of here.
yeah. And it felt so good because now instead of like I feel like our conscious brains, we're having a tough time with a lot of the negative self-talk. We don't know how to combat it. And it's always like, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to say to this person. And then this inner person who's being mean to me. And then when you get the like positive voice in you, it's like, oh, we are double teaming the negative voice now.
Mm.
And like, and now I'm also more equipped to myself deal with it. So it's just so incredibly helpful and healthy for people to really try to get in tune with that, because once they do, then they will have a lot more opportunities of just shutting it down and having a better day, as opposed to what people tend to do, which is just let that voice keep bothering them throughout the day.
Yeah. I'm really interested right now in the ways that I can make choices that help me combat that voice in really concrete ways. So getting sun in the morning and I've been doing morning pages for like 10 years and I'm not religious about them because I don't actually want to be religious about anything, but it's so habitual at this point that if I go a couple days without doing it, my body is like thinking I want to, you know, so yeah. It's like very, very habitual. And my husband and I got a cold plunge in our backyard. So I've been doing ice baths every day because I was like, my eating habits have changed. My workout habits have changed because I was like, I can't talk myself out of this. I need physical help to have my positive voice be able to calm down that inner critic and you know, trauma and all that. And those physical things have been just game changers. Like I was actually just talking to my husband about, we're super into Rick Rubin right now. And he's like, oh, I work 12 to 5, or I'm absolutely paraphrasing. So when he listens to this and I'm wrong, sorry, Rick, but that he spends his mornings being like,
walking,
I gotta get sun. Yeah. Walking on the beach. I gotta move. I gotta have a restful morning, all that. And I want that life. I want to sit under a tree. I want to be restful. I want to take care of myself.
Yeah.
And then when I get to work, in theory, I won't run into those roadblocks as an artist where I'm judging myself and then everything takes three times as long because I'm like,
yes,
because there's so much doubt and self-hatred.
Yes. Yes. And like being in New York in a culture that before the pandemic was really pushing hustle culture, which is
bullshit. I'm not a hustler. Can't hustle. That is just, I just can't do it. It's not my jam, man. I don't know.
But much of it in the art world is bullshit. Like anyone I've seen do it in the world of arts and entertainment, it just seems like they are trumpeting themselves up. They are trying to just look like they are doing something, but they're not doing anything different than anyone else is doing. But the way they're presenting is making people feel like, oh, I guess I'm not doing something. And then those people start talking and they write blogs or whatever. They come up with hashtags and they'll say like, oh, you got to hustle. You know, you got to just
hashtag hustle, hashtag afterlife, hashtag set life, hashtag crafty.
right.
I'm like, what? Wait, what are we doing? Why? I don't get it. I don't get it.
Like,
I
do mean, what you need to do for you, and I'm fine with that if it's like motivating you personally. But
when true.
People start saying it in a way that's like pressuring people, like, no, nah, this is what you need to be doing, and this, and you should this, and you should that, and it all ends up just sounding like bullshit. That's when I'm like, I don't want anything to do with any of that. I just want to work, and I want to be good at it, and I want to actually be proud of what I'm doing and not be just like phoning it in all the time. And I want to be growing. But like, everything's hard work. Everything. So this sort of like, oh, I've found the way for it's this hustle. No, it's just working hard. And
yeah.
You know, what you need to do for you is maybe a challenge for others, but if it's not a challenge for you, then, and it's working for you, then keep doing it. But don't shame other people.
Yeah. I'm okay. So metaphors are very important to me, and I've been trying to find the right metaphor for this. So maybe you can help me, because sometimes metaphors allow me to see more clearly when things are loud. Like, I can come back to this, mm-hmm. either this image or a mantra or whatever. But I'm not interested in hustling and doing busy work just to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm interested, though, in being more gritty and doing things when I don't feel like it. I realized, so I was just at the Chicago Shakespeare Theater doing Richard III, and it was like a pretty demanding schedule to begin with. But then because of COVID and other things, it was like we had understudy rehearsals and put in rehearsals. And because of my commute, I just ended up being at the theater like 11 hours a day for what felt like the entire contract of like 2.5 months. It felt like it started with like 8 hour days, and then it got more expansive, and then it stayed that way. Like, it never stopped until it was done.
Right.
And I was like, you know, I'm a little grittier than I thought. And like,
yeah.
I'm sure there's like filmmakers being like, I'm 16 hours a day. I don't actually want that. So if that's your flag to fly, I'm good. But so I don't need to be busy just to be busy, but right. I'm trying to bring more grit into my day-to-day work, where when I'm the only person holding me accountable,
right.
And I do more deep work. Can I, you know, work out a little harder when I'm when I'm cycling? Can I do the ice baths and stuff while also feeling like I can meditate and sit under a tree and I'm not hustling, right? So
right.
I don't know what that image is, because it sounds like I'm saying I want to hustle, but I don't want to hustle.
I know exactly what you're talking about, because I'm in the same boat deep dive into stuff where I'm like working on a project to the point where I honestly need to have a better routine about it so that I'm kinder to myself, because I will skip lunches, you know, like I don't need to do stuff like that. And you're not supposed to look at a computer screen for an hour or two straight. You're supposed to take breaks. I'm not good about that. I'm not good at it all.
I feel like that when I'm editing, like one of our films, I get so wrapped up in being like, I'll just do one more thing. I'll just do one more thing. Like, it's like such a flow thing.
I know what you mean. I want to be able to be head down when the time is right, super focused when the time is right, get the work done, be very invested and focused when I'm working on stuff, but then also be loose enough to take a break, meditate, do something good for myself and my mind.
Okay, my friend, you did it. You helped me attach the metaphor, and we're going to bring it right back to Bruce Lee. It's the idea of being water. That is what it is.
Oh.
Because it's the like, hey, when the water is still, I'm still. And when the current is running, I'm running. Mm-hmm. And the consistency of, you know, water running over the same rock and creating grooves and all of that. But then it can also be very, very still.
I guess it also needs like awareness. Like, you have to be really aware of when that slowdown is happening. You know, when it's a current, you know that's a current, you're working. But when it's slowing down, you need to adjust. You need to start adjusting at that point. And I don't adjust at that point. Like,
I'm,
I keep trying,
I'm like
to go.
I'm trying to listen to my intuition. Like, the part, because, you know, recently I had a few offers come my way that 5 years ago I would have been like, I'm going to kill for this. I want to do this. This is the thing. And there was something deep in my guts that was like, no, there's something else that's going to fill that space, but I literally don't know what it is. Mm-hmm. I cannot justify it logically, but the quiet part of me was like, no, I don't know why, but it's a no. And I still don't know why. We're going to find out, though. I feel like this year is going to be like an interesting little artist residency for
so.
Me.
I hope
yeah.
so.
Yeah.
You know, I think it is really being aware and like in tune with yourself and honest with yourself about what's going on and where you're at, because otherwise you just let things take you, and you, when you're supposed to be still and resting, you're not, because you're like, oh, but I shouldn't I be doing something? And when the current's going, you're like, oh, but don't I have all these other things to do?
Yeah. So it's, I was talking to an actress that I did a play with last summer about this idea of embracing stillness, mm-hmm. because that's how you work through the hard stuff. You know, mm-hmm. it's, I think it's appropriate to even numb with work, or, you know, how exercise, or, you know, sometimes do it's like with drugs or TV up or to a point
media,
because yeah. yeah, because you're like, hey, I need a little help right now. I'm like deep in it. And I don't think there's anything morally wrong with being like, I need a little help right now.
Right.
But in order to actually work through and heal and mm-hmm. tap into those things, you have to have a moment where you stop and you're like, I'm just going to be with it. And I think that was part, that's probably part of the reason that I was like, I got to say no to some stuff, because I was go, go, go. And I need to embrace the stillness to,
yeah,
you know, heal and
it's
express
about being
my art.
Conscious,
you know?
I think, too. Like, I one thing that I'm trying to get better at is with everything I do to be conscious about it. I feel like so much of modern Americans' day is doing stuff just because, whether it's the hustle thing or social media or sitting on their butt, it's always just like, just doing it, shrug shoulders, you know. And I don't hate social media, but I hate when I've been on it too long. It feels gross, and it's because I just was going on with no purpose and wasn't being conscious about why I was going on. It was just like, blah, okay, I'll just look at this. All right, I'll just keep looking at stuff. So instead, like, I'm trying to say, all right, I got some time and I would kind of like to get on Instagram, but for what? I don't want to go on and just scroll until I feel like I've scratched an itch. I want to like be like, what am I in the mood for?
Because you'll never scratch that itch, because
exactly.
It also creates the itch.
Exactly. It's not good for your brain.
Yeah.
So you got to
yeah.
fight that part of it by trying to be conscious about why you're going on there. So if I'm going to go on and like, oh, I want to see some guitar stuff. Okay, let's just do that. And then when we've seen a few guitar things, we get the hell off the app.
I like that. Going in with a purpose. I'm
right.
going to steal that.
Please do. Because I'm trying to get better at all of these things, but I just want, what will end up happening is I'm going to fall down a rabbit hole, and then all this time is going to pass, and then I'm going to remember what I was supposed to be doing, and I'm like, oh, now I'm behind.
That sort of reminds me of, I'm reading The Art of Gathering, and it's like having purposeful gatherings and very specific intentions. And I kind of love that even for yourself when it's not about a gathering and being like, I'm having very specific intentions about why I'm getting on Instagram, or why I'm reading this book, or why I'm cleaning the house, because then being intentional will make you more mindful as you're doing it. I think that's cool.
I do too. You've done a ton of things. You're a filmmaker and an improviser. You're from Utah originally, correct?
Correct.
How long did you live there?
I lived in Utah growing up and then moved when I was like 22. So I went to Southern Utah University, which was like 3 hours from where I grew up in Orem. Mm-hmm. Then I moved to San Francisco for about a year, and then LA after that. And then I was in LA until lockdown, and then started to want to sit under more trees. And
so you moved out to Denver.
Yes.
Well, Denver is a beautiful place.
It's great. Highly suggested for me. And the improv community here is
it's a good community.
It is small but mighty. And I sense that it will keep bubbling and growing. Like it's on a a rise where people are really interested in the work and everybody's such sweeties. I'm really, really in love with it here.
That's awesome. I love to hear, that. You loved film from an early age and got really into it. And so that's how you got into filmmaking. Essentially, it was just like your hyper-focused love of it.
Yeah.
watching movies that were probably inappropriate for a kid to be watching.
But. Yeah. It's so funny because I always am like, theater's my first love, but that's actually not true. It was like, even before I found theater in very early, like middle school, my brother, I was stealing movies from my brother's shelf that I just absolutely shouldn't have been watching. And my parents at that time were very, considering I grew up super Mormon and my parents are still very religious. Mm-hmm. You'd think that they would have censored that, but my parents love movies so much that I was like going downstairs and being like, oh, we're watching Predator now and Aliens and Pulp Fiction. And I'm like, what am I? And now when I think about it, I'm like, wow, they're the worst Mormons. How cute of them. I don't know.
So when you were in college, were you studying film or was it just theater at that point?
I studied classical acting, the heavy emphasis on Shakespeare, which is professionally as an actor, the space that I've worked in the most.
Okay.
It's such a niche thing. It's crazy. I see tons of overlap between my art forms of like improv and theater, Shakespeare and film because I'm deeply in them.
Right, right. But yeah, a movie like Real Genius has a little bit of that Shakespeare, like people who clearly studied Shakespeare.
Yeah, there's a lot of, I just feel like Shakespeare's sort of like the ballet of theater. It's the very disciplined, heavy lifting, makes everything else seem easy part of the art form, for me anyway. But I felt like, I don't know, filmmaking was just sort of always in the back of my mind. Like I actually am surprised that it took me so long in my adulthood to come around and be like, I'm going to make a film and I'm going to do it proper and I'm going to give it 100%. Because I've always been a shutter bug and like fucking around with cameras and taking pictures and all of that. But improv is actually the thing that led me back to it, because improv was the thing that released my inner writer and made me realize that I wasn't just a performer and just an actor as I had spent so much time being, but that I was the creator. And I feel like improv led me back to wanting to make films.
Yeah, that's awesome. And when did improv become a love for you? Was that something that you found when you went out to Los Angeles?
Well, when I was at SUU, there's a theater in Cedar City, Utah called OTC Comedy. And they are amazing. Shout out them. They're delightful.
Yeah. Wendy and TJ and Rev.
Yes, Red Rocks. It is an excellent improv festival. It feels like really intimate and really social. You know, sometimes you show up at an improv festival and you're like, well, this was cool, but I didn't really meet anyone. Like Red Rocks is like you become best friends. You see those people everywhere and it's I get to reunite with BOC every year. It's my favorite.
Oh, cool.
But we had some overlap where they were like seniors when I was a freshman. And then they built this theater that's still there and still running, this improv theater. And I started watching them and I was like, that's cool. And they really encouraged me to come improvise. And then they started bringing out people from LA and Chicago to coach and do workshops. And I met James Grace from IO West. He came out to do a workshop and was like, hey, if you ever come out to LA, I'll give you an internship. You can come take classes. And after I graduated, I was like, I think that's what I really want to do is like go to LA and improvise. So I was a house manager at IO West. And I thought that improv, I was like, oh, I'll learn some new skills. And then I got so fucking deep in it that I still like can't get away from it. It's like all me and my husband talk about. It's like my worldview now. It was so unexpected, and now it's just sort of like everything to me.
That's awesome. Gosh, there's something about the way you said I'll learn some new skills reminded me of Sarah Silverman for some reason. Are you like a big fan of hers?
Dude, I do love her. I think she might be my favorite stand-up. I think she's a fucking baller.
Yeah.
Everything
I just
she's
picked
so
up on the voice.
Well, that's crazy. She's so soft.
Mm-hmm.
And
but her material is not.
And gives yes, and has permission to be so naughty. And there's something about that that I find. I think that's me in a nutshell. I want to be vulnerable. I want to be soft. And also I want to like fucking blow some shit up. So
that's a good approach to take, I think. Because like art, you know, having vulnerability in art is good. And I feel like being soft is being vulnerable. And so it's a great thing. But then when you're also willing to like go to the edge, then it's like, okay, we've got a really full scope here of where this person could go. Very broad horizons. I love that.
Yes.
In improv, what is like a big philosophy for you? Would you say it's soft, but also blowing shit up?
Yeah, I feel like a sacred fool. You know, I want everything to feel very sacred, but also so stupid and like it's all play and it's not real. So I like to approach things with intention and to feel like I'm coming in and I am chasing beauty and compassion and catharsis, but then also farts. Yeah. So, you know, if I get too precious about something, that doesn't work for me. But if everything's a fuck around, I don't feel like my heart is satisfied. And so I like to marry the sacred and the stupid.
Yeah. I love that. I love that idea. Yeah. I love when people marry stupid with stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Say that at your wedding.
It's already in my vows.
Yeah.
Hey, you're marrying stupid, baby.
Yeah, you're marrying stupid, my friend. I also feel very much like on a more craft side that improv to me is about splitting the difference between play and joy, like bravery and risk, and then just very skillful awareness. And so if I have a high level of joy and play, that's very watchable. It's probably the most watchable thing to me. But I like my improv and I like my students and the improv I watch to also feel brave, like we're doing just manageable challenges, as we talked about.
Yeah.
And for there to be a level of skill is pleasurable and allows you to access those other two more.
Right.
So when I'm teaching or drilling myself or any of those things, I'm sort of within a little triangle. I love a triangle.
Oh, yeah.
A little triangle
of the
structure.
Paul Valancourt. Different kind of triangle, maybe, but
triangles are strong. Paul knows what he's talking about.
Right. I mean, and it's marrying ideas, right? It's like bringing different things together. I agree. You know, like sometimes people get too caught up in just the one thing, but like, well, there are a whole lot of things that make a scene good. So how you can focus on them in a given moment can really benefit that scene and benefit you. Yeah, I love people taking chances. You know, that's something in my improv I want to start doing a little better at. It's like taking chances and having something unique to present or say.
Even as we're talking, I'm like, it's good for me to check back in with myself because I'm like, oh, I think right now my bravery is really high. Mm-hmm. And that's great. And I think that my joy is pretty high, but I'm like, oh, there's actually some skill-based things that I probably could touch base with that might make, you know, always back to the basic skill-based stuff that I'm like, oh, if I work on that a little bit at home, I think it will present itself on stage through my bravery and my joy a little better. And it's been a while since I touched base with those things. So I'm like, okay.
Nice. You had a popular team at IO called Storm Chaser.
Oh, wow. That's I love Storm Chaser. You know what? I don't know if we were popular, but I do love them.
But it was a noteworthy team, I feel like. You had a podcast, too, that you were doing where you're interviewing people. But then also after shows, you would break down your shows sometimes for the podcast.
So
that's a very interesting approach.
So fucking nerdy, man.
Sure,
like,
but that's like we need it. Us nerds need that.
Yeah, that podcast is 100% BOC's fault. That was another moment in time where he was like, you know what you should do? And we were like, you're right, we should do that. But because it was something where I'm like, sort of how I was living my life anyway is like very, Storm Chaser was my most obsessive improv moment in time where I was I think from those years, I have like 10 Moleskines full of notes of
Wow.
just notes from rehearsal. I would voice memo rehearsal. And then I'd be like, okay, I heard it once and I practiced. And then I would listen, I'd go to Starbucks and listen to the voice memo and take physical notes, and I would pause it, and it would take me like 4 hours because I'd like pause the, you know, the
I recorded
take
notes,
pause, take
but
notes.
I never wrote them down.
Oh my God. It was a nightmare. And then I'd be like rereading it. And then at that time we were coached by Jet Eveleth and Holly Laurent, and they would be like, here's homework. And then I'd go home, and Jet's also somebody who, if you, man, she, if you haven't interviewed her, you got to get her on. She's a fucking delight.
Awesome.
But she's like a homework heavy teacher.
Mm-hmm.
But I noticed over the years that I was like, I don't know how many people actually do the homework, but Jet would be like, I want you to sign up for a regular yoga class. And I'd be like, okay. And she's like, and here's like 30 books. And I read them in a year because I was like, here's 30 like improv books that aren't about improv that I like read. So I was like super nerdy. It was all during Storm Chase. And I was like, I'm going to work on these accents, and I'm going to do space work every day. And I was like,
wow,
very much my own drill sergeant, and was like so motivated.
Yeah.
Now I sit under a tree and I don't.
Well, you know, this is the thing. It's like, you know, there was that time, you know, we're mentioning Rick Rubin, and now he's in that sitting under, he's been for a while, that sitting under a tree sort of stage.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, you look at the beginning and it was very focused. He was in a dorm room making beats and recording people, you know, like that's intense. And you had this intense time where you're like reading a bunch and practicing a bunch. And I relate, but you're much better than me.
No. Listen, I mean, I can't even compete with my 20s improv obsession. I'm like, what was I? How did I do that?
I was obsessed, but I was always like, you know what would be good is to practice object work. Like mm-hmm. actually open a cupboard drawer and do that a few times, see how it feels, and then pretend you're doing it.
I tell my students
to
do this.
I never did that,
like,
but I feel like you did
20 seconds. It takes 20 seconds. Do it right now. Take your glasses off. Great. Now space work it. Great. Now put them back on.
For real or space
work? Yeah, for real. Now space work it. You did your homework. Like that's I was like if you do that every day, I was like, it's so much better than nothing. It's like no joke,
right? But this is what I'm saying, like I would always think like, oh, such a good idea to do that, and then I didn't do it. But I feel like you said, oh, it's a good idea to do it, and then you actually did it.
Yeah, fucking brown nosing student. I've always been I like being a student. I'm like I really get off on it if I care about the subject matter.
Yeah, same. I got so many class notebooks. I think I've got like 7 different journal books that it's like from the first class I took in South Carolina to the last class I took here in New York. And I've got the notes from practices. I've got a couple of notebooks for that.
And now you got a morning pages notebook too.
Right. Well, I'm at least doing that one on like a doc. On
oh,
my
are
computer.
You? So I write them. I used to keep them, and now I want so badly to just not be censored that I throw them away afterwards. Oh, I used to keep them, and they're actually really fun. I went back and I found one from when I met my husband.
Oh.
And it was so sweet that I was like, I'm glad I kept this. But now I'm still just like, no, I want to be able to like let my inner critic be a fucking dick in these pages so that it will mm-hmm. stop being inside of me. So
yeah.
I throw them away.
That's what I use them for, is to just like, if I have to complain, then I just like complain a lot. But sometimes it's like, oh, I've got this idea that I'm hashing out, and I'll use it for that. And I'm like, oh, I should maybe use that for the podcast or something one day. Mm. So like, I'm keeping them for that in case that there's like stuff for a book or stuff for, I don't know, a blog post.
That's when stuff starts coming out. I'll be like, so I've got my really trashy notebook. I'm doing my morning pages. And like, you'll see me at some point. I'll be like, this is good. And then I'll pull out the Moleskine and start, you know what I mean? I'm like, now our brain's in a different place.
Yeah. I'm just going to copy paste.
I love it. Yeah. And a dog. It's so smart. You're
because I know 10 years ago, I would have tried to like freehand it all. And now I'm like, I don't have time for this.
No, that's definitely like, I like the physical act of it, but some people don't. I use something called Rome Research that was created. I think the same person who created it wrote the book, How to Take Great Notes, which I read a long time ago. And it's a cool program that like you could do little hashtags and it will create a way for you to look through anything that's related to improv. And then suddenly you start to make different connections. It's like a web of notes that does it for you. And
I need that.
It's really helpful. And it's really cool.
Yeah. I'm going to have to remember that. Okay. I could talk to you for hours. This is our first time talking.
This is fucking great. We just met.
I know. You're so cool. I feel like such a kinship with you because you are a nerd like me. And you're even a better nerd than I am. So I'm looking up to you.
No, you saying I'm a better nerd is the same thing as apologizing. And I'm going to put my arm around you. Okay. Just be like, no.
Fair. I will have to just talk again sometime.
Yeah, I love it.
But now it's time to create something together because we haven't scratched the surface on what you've done. But we should create something together. And I'm trying to think, like, is it maybe finding that, like, giving advice on how someone can find their version of sitting under a tree? Or maybe we could just talk it out and figure it out.
I like it. I think chasing discomfort has to be the thing, because a lot of people have a hard time with stillness and have a hard time being alone. I understand that. I feel like I spent many years as a youth and a young adult being like, I don't want to be alone. I got to have the TV on. I like would rather be with people all the time. And coming to peace with stillness and being alone is uncomfortable at first.
Yeah.
But if you practice discomfort by being like, oh, I'm a little scared of roller coasters, I should say yes to that. Or I don't like to sing karaoke, I should say yes to that. Or an ice bath sounds scary, I should say yes to that. Mm-hmm. Then suddenly discomfort, you kind of make friends with it. You put a little smile on your face while you're doing it. And then sitting there in discomfort becomes just that same bit, like the same practice, you know?
Yeah. And does sometimes sitting with discomfort give someone the opportunity to go, oh, I don't like this and it's not for me, but you know what would be something I think would challenge me in a good way is this other thing, but they had to sit in the discomfort to get there.
I think so. In fact, here, let's try it right now with our listeners. Let's just sit here in silence and we'll see if anybody does it with us. We'll never know. We'll never know if they're doing it. They could just fast forward straight to the jokes, but maybe we'll just try it for a couple of minutes. What do you think? I'm going to look at you.
Yeah, likewise.
All right, that was a couple minutes, I think.
I didn't look at the time, but yeah.
Could you hear all the children yelling? I live across the street from an elementary school.
I could not hear on your side anything like that. It was just the sort of dull sound of, I guess, the internet waves or something. I don't know, just like whatever, almost like a, not a white noise, but just like whatever that is over the internet. And then all the noise outside of my
window. Yes, I was hearing all the noise outside my window, just like the children. I love living across the street from an elementary school. They're just like, every recess, there's like yelling and laughing. And I'm like, oh, this is like I don't find it very comforting. We're bonded forever. And also, that was accidentally like the most Tasha thing we could have created, I think. I always just make my students look at each other. And they're like, there's a lot of eye contact. And I'm like, yeah, it's real. That's the easiest discomfort, I think, is being in tension with another person.
Yes.
And feeling the energy between you and just being like, all right, let's just be in it. Let's not try to dissipate it or explain it or quantify it and all that. And that's the easiest practice. And yeah. It's also like the hardest thing in the world, right?
Yeah. I honestly just saw a thing a few days ago on Instagram that Will Smith, I know he's not everyone's favorite person anymore. But
he's going through something, huh?
I don't know what's going on, but he's definitely doing therapy and stuff because he brings that stuff up out of nowhere. And it's like, I don't know what that means. And he did it in this interview where this guy was like, I can't remember exactly what the question was. Like, what's the meaning of life to Will Smith or something? And Will Smith was like, let's just stare at each other in silence. And so they did it. And the guy was like starting to look away. He's like, don't look away. Look at me. And the guy was clearly getting uncomfortable and not able to sit with that comfort and was like bashfully laughing and, you know, just the awkward laughs and expressions. And Will Smith said that thing that you were, that whatever that was like making you kind of like feel that discomfort, that's it. Like, that's the thing. And it was like,
I think there's something to that. I don't know if it's the meaning of life, but it certainly like makes you feel in touch with
right
whatever this thing that we're in.
And isn't that like those moments in live performance, but if it's captured on camera, it's still amazing. But in live performance, when two people look at each other and then there's something that happens that is that moment of discomfort, but they both sit with it.
Mm-hmm.
Or whether it's maybe it's not always a moment of discomfort. It's just some sort of raw emotion.
It's like unfiltered spontaneity. Yeah.
Right.
Happening. Yeah.
Something that was unexpected between them and they don't shy from it and they keep it. Even if for a second they have some kind of micro expression about it. That's all there. And that's always the best stuff.
That's the thing that I love about improv, but that I feel like I'm always trying to capture on film or on stage as an actor in a play is like the moment of bafflement or spontaneity, whatever it is, that raw moment that happens, the allowance time to let that run through your body unfiltered and it is a split second difference between great acting.
Right.
And horseshit.
Yes.
And even if we don't totally know as an audience, like what it is we're feeling, we feel that split second difference of a person who has cleaned out the pipes enough in their body and their emotions that like they can take something in and be with it. And the person who takes something in, hears it in their smart brain and can even like respond very quickly with their brain, but that it's like coming through a filter. Is like, oh, it's walking this crazy tightrope. And it's like, all I want is the state of bafflement. It's so fucking hard. And it's the thing that makes acting like when you touch it, you're like, you feel like you surfed a 100-foot wave. When you capture it on camera, you're like, oh, you see it in an improv show. You're like, this is fucking amazing.
It
but
is.
Most of the time.
Far between.
Yeah. Most of the time you biff. Most of the time you know.
Yeah. It's such a hard thing to do, but it's the thing that I feel like we almost do. Because that is the work. That is the thing. The best work I've seen has that element to it in some form or fashion. Like even Vincent D'Onofrio on Law & Order Criminal Intent. You know that thing he would do when he would bend down Like he would bend at the hip and he would sort of make eye contact in a weird way. It became like the thing that was on the show. And someone asked him, it was like a big thing at the time. Because it was very interesting looking, but he was also like holding focus in a very unique way. And someone asked him why he did that. And he said, well, it was first time it happened. I was filming a scene and the actor wouldn't look at me. So I just bent down so he would look at me.
He's and, like, I'm just listening to the moment. And you guys are like, what the fuck are they doing? But he's right. Like, I'm just responding to what's in front of me. That's
right. Right. Exactly. And so him being like, no, I want you to look at me because I'm trying to read you, said so much. And all he did was bend down. Right. Yeah. And in improv, when people shy away from that, it's sort of it kills something. Or at least eliminates the possibilities. And I'm not saying I'm good at that sort of thing because I'm not.
Who is? Very few people touch it.
Right.
That's why we're all chasing it. I really do. I said the surfing thing because I watched that. I think it was an HBO series, 100-foot wave of these surfers who are chasing these huge waves. And I'm like, that's exactly what it is. A wave like that doesn't always come along. You go out looking for it every day. It doesn't always come along, and then when it does, you don't always make it through without crashing. But when you do, you're like,
it's the best thing.
Holy shit, this was like the moment of my life. And I feel like as an actor, you show up, as an improviser, you keep showing up. Most of the time you're surfing tiny little waves, a big wave doesn't even come, but you're like hoping you're ready when it does.
Yeah, we got to talk again.
Yeah, can I plug something?
Yes.
As far as like where my like acting and improv and filmmaking training like kind of are all touching each other is we just released our short Inch Thick Knee Deep on Screamfest's YouTube channel. And it is my little baby. And I feel like everything we talked about being like, gotta be brave and capturing spontaneity and bafflement. It was like one of those moments where I felt like on set those days as a filmmaker and an actor and an improviser that I caught my biggest wave yet. So that's my plug to be like, go watch me catch my huge wave. I don't always catch huge waves, but I'm really proud of this one. And I feel like I surfed it pretty well and that it's spontaneous. So
I got to see it. I can't wait to watch it.
Hell yeah.
That was one of the things that I saw Brian rave about. So
yeah, Brian, I've brought the little script to him and he encouraged me to make it. So he's definitely a big part of the reason that happened. So
awesome. Well, thanks so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you, my friend.
There it is, folks. Hope you got some nuggets from that discussion that you can use for whatever you are working on. I love that so much that I vow to have her on again. I'm making a lot of vows these days. We have a link in the description to Inch Thick Knee Deep. Go watch that. Also go to darklingfilms.com to check out her other projects. Follow her on Instagram at Anatasha Blakely. And you can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at There It Is Pod. And subscribe to our YouTube channel at There It Is. And follow me on Twitter at Jason Farr Jokes and Instagram at Jason Farr Picks. Also subscribe to our comedy lifestyle newsletter and support us if you can. We have a Patreon and a PayPal. Go to thereitispod.com for newsletter and support info. Links in bio. Until next time, be good to each other.
The music for the theme song was created by Neil Brooks. The rap was written and performed by Nick Acevedo. The logo for There It Is was created by Jeff Prater. The There It Is podcast is produced by Jason Farr.